Brother Dyke had read, the Luke account of that. The Passover feast was drawing to a close. Jesus had sung a hymn of the Hallel, and it's now time to begin the most, to me, one of the most painful experiences that Jesus had as recorded in the Scriptures. The event of the Garden of Gethsemane. And to me, it's very much inclusive to what we have with the incident on the cross. It's the preparation for that. In Matthew 26, open your Bibles up to Matthew 26. In Matthew 26, verses 36 through 46, it states that then Jesus came with them to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." And he took with him Peter and two sons of Zebedee and began to be grieved and distressed. In John 18, verse 1, states that when Jesus had spoken these words, he went forth with his disciples over the ravine of the Kidron, where there was a garden into which he himself entered and his disciples. Now, based on this, this would mean that he left the east gate of Jerusalem, went down over the Kidron Ravine, and ascended slightly up to the Mount of Olives, where there was a garden. And it was here that he arrived at the location which he often frequented, because it said in 22 verse 39 of Luke that this was his custom. He had done this before. He had been here before. The word Gethsemane means the olive press. And apparently, it was a private grove of olive trees that Jesus had the permission to frequent. And from here, it would be possible to see many in the town this night delivering gifts to the poor, which they did on the Passover. Perhaps going into town or collecting some other things for the Feast of the Passover. And at midnight that night, you would have a large number of people going to the temple to make the preparations for the multiple sacrifices they would have the next day. And ironically, in the place, the Garden of the Olive Press, Jesus would be pressed more than olives could ever imagine. Because in Gethsemane was a very high, intense place for Jesus. The Mark account said that it was here in the opening of the garden where he left eight of the disciples, telling them to pray that they may not enter into temptation. And he took with him the three of his inner circle, Peter, James, and John, to go into the midst of that garden to have a prayer session where he would deal with what was at hand. And then continuing in Mark or Matthew chapter 26, verse 38, he said to them, "My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch with me." And he went a little beyond them and fell on his face and prayed, saying, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet not my will, but as thou wilt." In the Mark account, 14 verse 35, it said he went a little bit beyond them and fell to the ground and began to pray that if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. You can't help but to feel for Jesus if you've ever had a moment of extreme grief. Your legs may not even feel like they can support you. Oftentimes we know the scene where somebody says, "Are you sitting down?" before they break the news to somebody. I've often heard of stories of preachers who had to go spend time with loved ones when they lost someone very close to them. And the grief is incredible. I remember when a dear friend of mine died in a car wreck. I had planned to do a mission trip to Egypt with him. We were very, very close. We had traveled many, many miles for domestic missions, and I just talked with him. And the next day in class, it was announced to me that he had died. But but among my computer emails, there was one from him saying, "I will see you shortly." And I held it in all the way from class. You know, guys don't cry, do they? And in the days I drove home, pulled the car in the garage, and collapsed in the laundry room and wept. I kind of understand what you're doing, Jesus. He's deeply grieved. Luke 24, verse 41 says he went a stone's throw away from them. That's where he fell down. Now, I don't know how far a stone's throw is. I could throw a stone pretty far, and some stones are big that you can't throw very far. But I know this. It was a full moon, and they could see Jesus where he was because it was recorded to them. And it was here that he deeply grieved at what was about to occur in the crucifixion. And it's been building for some time. 2 days prior in John 12, verse 27, he said, "Now my soul has become troubled. What shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. But for this purpose I came to this hour." The tension is building in his heart. And now it's the night that he will be taken, and the next day he'll be crucified. The next 12 hours will be terrible for him. He was crying out to the Father to take away this terrible event in his life, if it was possible. And it wasn't about Jesus, it was about the will of the Father. Mark 14:36 says he was saying, "Abba, Father, all things are possible for thee. Remove this cup from me, yet not as I will, but as thou wilt." This is a more personal phrase in the Aramaic. It's almost as if he's saying, "Dad, Dada." It's really the literal translation of it, Dada. It's a term of endearment that someone very close to God would use. He's having a very personal moment with the Father. And this has always been a difficult text in regard to Jesus, because it almost makes him look like a coward if you're not careful and read the whole thing. It's not that he was afraid of the pain or the suffering, but more of the separation from God and the guilt of humanity, two things that were completely alien to him in his nature. The separation of God. He was always with God the Father in Genesis 1:26. "Let us make man after our image, after our likeness." He was there. He was the creator, John chapter 1, verse 3 tells us. Colossians chapter 1, verse 15 and 16 confirms to us. And Matthew 27, verse 46, quoting Psalm 22, he says, it says, saying, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" God would not be with him on this day. Luke 23, verse 44, it said, "Now about the sixth hour, darkness fell upon the whole land until the ninth hour." It's what an incredible event it is when God turns his back on his Son, not even the heavens shine forth their light. It was an incredible thing. You know, I know couples who've been married 40, 50 years. You know, recently, Paul Harvey died last week, and his wife had died earlier in the year. They were married 68 years. You know, it's just an incredible close bond they had. And he used to talk on the show, this person was married, these people are married 70 years today. I wish he could have made it to 70. But his wife had died of leukemia, but Just the incredible closeness of these couples. I mean, they've eaten meals together for a half century plus, done everything together. And the suffering that one has when the other passes on. Oftentimes you'll see that the other one follows shortly thereafter, almost as if they didn't have the heart to go on. Imagine being with God not 50 years, but for eternity. Before anything was created, and for that moment to not be with his Father would be the most devastating thing one could imagine. And not only that, but the guilt of humanity. He had the sins of the world put on him. Hebrews 4 verse 15 says, "For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weakness, but one who has been tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin." 2 Corinthians 5:21 says, "He made him who knew no sin to become sin on our behalf, that we might become righteousness of God in him." 1 Peter 2 verse 24 tells us, "He bore our sins in his body on the cross, that we might die to sin and live to righteousness, for by his wounds we are healed." I mean, never knew a sin. That's an alien concept to us. I mean, we take our best days, the best day you ever have, and God was not impressed. "Your righteousness is as filthy rags," we're told. You know, I've never had a day that I know God has been impressed with. But can you imagine what it was like? What it would be like to not have any sin, to not have anything that you made God upset with you? To alienate yourself from God in any way, and yet all in one day Jesus had the sins of the world put on him and the Father wasn't there. Incredible. I want you to think back to your darkest day. The day where you thought you surpassed all other days for sin. It's terrible, isn't it? Things you'd never want anyone to know. God knew it. Jesus knew it when he hung on the cross, and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. He said, "You're still worth it." But yet he had to go to the cross and take not only your thought and your thought and your thought, but the entire sins of the world had to be laid on him. Wow. Now I think we understand why it was a grief which we cannot begin to imagine. It was a terrible event in Jesus' life. He knew the weight of the world's sin would be placed on him. And for this and the only time he'd be separated from God, the dual thought of that would have consumed him greatly. Hebrews 5, verse 7 and 8 says this, "In the days of his flesh he offered up both prayer and supplications with loud crying and tears to the one who could save him from death. And he was heard because of his piety. Although he was the son, he learned obedience from the things which he suffered." It's a terrible, terrible grief. No one here can really understand. He understands how we feel. But I challenge you to even come close to what Jesus was feeling on that day. And in this garden, just the thought of this terrible, terrible thing that would have to occur to him. In Matthew 26, verse 40 through 42, "Continuing, he came to the disciples and found them sleeping, and said to Peter, 'So you men could not keep watch with me for 1 hour? Keep watching and praying that you may not enter into temptation, for the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak.'" Returns from that first session of prayer, find these three disciples asleep. And he singles out one of them above all the other two. And that's Peter. And perhaps he did this because just a little bit ago, Peter said, "I would be willing to die for you." And Jesus said, "You're going to deny me." And right now, Peter won't even stay awake for the moment. We have to remember that it was getting late. It had been a long day, and you might think that Jesus would have more understanding with this. But the real issue is that they were about to undergo a great trial. For 600 men with torches would be showing up shortly. He'd be betrayed. They will be under huge stress, and they better be preparing that they may not be in that temptation. The best way for them to be prepared is to be alert and to prepare with this prayer. You know, Jesus said in the pattern of prayer, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. We're told in Colossians chapter 4, verse 2, to devote ourselves to prayer and keep an alert with an attitude of thanksgiving. Ephesians 6, 18, with all prayer and petition, we're to pray all times in the Spirit. With this view, be on alert with all perseverance and petition for all the saints. This is not a new concept, and it's just as applicable today for us as it was back then. We'll save that for last. Matthew 26, 42 through 44 says this, he went away again a second time and prayed, Father, if it cannot pass away unless I drink it, thy will be done. And again he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them again and went away and prayed a third time, saying the same thing once more. As Lett mentioned prior, it was such an extremely trying time for Jesus. So much so that Luke says in 22 verse 43, now an angel from heaven appeared to him, strengthening him. We haven't seen this happening since Matthew chapter 4 verse 11. After those 40 days of fasting and prayer in the desert, he'd be tempted by the tempter. And the angels came and ministered to him shortly thereafter as Satan fled. Luke, who was a physician, mentioned something that the other writers left out. He says in 22 verse 44, and being in agony, he was praying very fervently, and his sweat became like drops of blood falling down upon the ground. Now some say that his dripped from him like he was bleeding, but it's actually proposed that there is a condition called hematidrosis, which is where the pressure can be so great. Some of you might have had extreme pressure, where the internal pressures of the body is so great, capillaries near the skin burst. When that human will sweat, blood actually comes out in it. And if that's the case, we can only begin to imagine the stress that Jesus had. I remember I had stress so bad one time. You know, it was like the worst day. I mean, I didn't think it could get any worse, and it just kept getting worse. It was like the snowball day. I mean, it just started out as a little snowball, and as the day went on, it kept getting worse. I kept saying, how could it get any worse than this? And it kept getting worse, and I could just feel that, you know, that pulsating blood up in your neck. You know, where it feels like you're wearing a shirt and a tie, but you're wearing a t-shirt, and your hair is standing up, and you can't believe it. Your eyes are getting that speckled stuff in it, you know, those floaters. I mean, and you feel like a stroke coming on or something. Have you ever had those, or am I the only one who had that? Joe, do I need to go see a doctor about this? Okay. I know I'm not the only one. You have those Fred Sanford moments where you say, I'm coming for you, Elizabeth. Imagine if you were going to go through what Jesus had. Pressure. Physiological pressure. Capillaries bursting. Some Jews taught it that to pray about something three times in a session, to fervently pray, hit it three times would complete a sequence of prayer for that issue. It was three times that God communicated the acceptance to Peter that Gentiles were okay. And his vision in Acts 10 verse 16 happened three times, and immediately the object was taken up into the sky. It was three times that Paul would pray for a thorn to be removed from his flesh until he got the answer, my grace is sufficient for thee. The fact that Jesus prayed three times for the removal of this trial indicates us severity of the grief he experienced in Gethsemane. Three times he deeply meditated his desire not to go through with it. But three times he yielded to the plan which was foreordained before the creation of the earth. fact that he prayed three times tells me he's terribly grieved. And then in verse 45 and 46, it says he came to his disciples and said, "Are you still taking your rest? Behold, the hour is at hand. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Arise, let us be going. Behold, the one who betrays me is at hand." Third time, Jesus caught him sleeping. They're exhausted and they're under tremendous stress of their own. You know, it's been the busiest week of their life. I know busy, okay? I'm going to change my middle name to busy or multitasker. And these guys, I couldn't keep up with them. On Sunday, they had the triumphal entry. Monday was the cleansing of the temple. Tuesday, a confrontation of the leaders. Wednesday and Thursday, preparation to the Passover. To top it all off, there was a multi-mile walk out of town every night and back into town the next day. I mean, they're worn out. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. They are broke down. They are just worn out. I mean, if there was a Starbucks back then, I guarantee you they were going to it. I can imagine Peter say, "I need a cappuccino, Christ. Let's just go in here. This is. I'm like exhausted." Mark account says that by the time he finds them sleeping the third time, he says, "It is enough." They'd had their chance to strengthen themselves through these prayers. And now it was time. Are you ready for the test? They had their moments, but they chose sleep. What I want you to take from this morning are the following three points. Here's your sermon. I just gave you the history. Number one, when you're worn out, pray for strength. When you're worn out, pray for strength. Even though the apostles had a long, drawn-out week filled with incredibly emotionally draining events, they were not praying like they should have. Jesus knew what was coming and told them they needed to prepare for this and prepare in prayer, but they did not. Jesus had a longer week than any of them. He focused on prayer to the Father. He drew great strength from his prayer to God. He entered the garden deeply grieved and left with the strength of the lion of the tribe of Judah, ready to march in and save the world. Can you imagine what the crucifixion would have been like if you pulled the pages of the Garden of Gethsemane out? I don't think I could appreciate it the same way. And hopefully you would not either. And we all have busy schedules. If you do not, I have some stuff for you to do. I know that I am often meeting myself coming back from my last appointment. Like that old Dunkin' Donuts commercial, "Time to make the donuts," and the guy meets himself in the doorway. I feel like that a lot of times. My kids have name tags sometimes. I had to ask one of them what my wife's name was. I needed to take some time off. There are all those work responsibilities that we have, and then to pile it on is the home responsibilities, and not to mention the kids and those sporting events. My goodness. I mean, when does it end? I mean, why can't you just go out for like one sport? You got to be signed up for eight of them, and now you got to go here. Wait a second, and then you know these things keep coming up, and my time is gone, and now I don't have sleep. The elders told me I'm limited to 5 small home group Bible studies. Thank you, my elders. You are my friends, because I won't stop. And there's a lot of you who are workaholics. And then you have that vacation that isn't even like a vacation. You ever have that? You got to take a 2-week vacation to recover from the first vacation you took to rest up. Doesn't work that way, does it? I can't tell you how many times I felt worn out And I received the strength of the Energizer Bunny by just having a long prayer with my Father in heaven. You can, should, and some are already doing this. When you're wore out, before you reach for the caffeine pill, before you reach for the cup of Java from Starbucks, there's something that doesn't cost $4.25. It's called prayer, and it can be done at $4.25. Pray to God. Get your strength from Him. Number two, when you face the tough times, pray with persistence. Pray with persistence. It is with the persistent prayer that you get through the tough times of your life. I would have to say that with what Jesus was going through qualifies as the toughest week of all time. He did not leave it alone at one prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane, but three intense moments with God. Three hits on just one event. But, you know, some have gone back and you just trace the last week of Jesus' life. He had very little sleep and he prayed a bunch. The tougher the times were for Jesus, the more persistent he was in prayer. We need to keep that in memory, for we have weeks that are tough. Not nearly as tough as Jesus, but we have some tough ones. Maybe it's the car trouble that you had, difficulties. Maybe it's the money or nagging health problem. Perhaps it's marriage difficulty. Whatever the difficult situation, pray with persistence, and it will help tremendously. And the last point, whenever you feel like giving up. Now I'm going to take a quick poll, okay? Now, I'm going to raise my hand, but I just want to see, I want to make sure I'm not alone in this. How many have felt like, in the last 5 years, like giving up? Raise your hand. Okay, those of you who do not have your hands up, all right, I want to have you all over for lunch. I got to figure out how you've never done that. I mean, it is incredibly hard at times. And I'm glad that the fact that you're here this morning tells me that you didn't give up. There are some that have. But I can say the biggest difference for those who gave up and those who didn't give up is that they prayed for courage to keep going on. Lord, help me to press on to the mark of the prize, the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. Lord, help me. Help me to be strong with what I got to face. Lord, give me strength. Give me courage. I'm persistently coming to you. He'll give you courage. He will every time. Jesus was facing the toughest dozen hours of his life, and it would be necessary to tackle it in prayer. In that time, he would be beaten, spit on, slandered, cursed, humiliated, stripped of his clothes, hung naked on a cross to die, had the sins of the world piled upon him, and had his Father turn his back on him. If there was ever a time to give up, Jesus had every right to do so, but he thought of the goodwill of the people he wanted to save, and that was you and me. And I'm so glad, Jesus. Are you listening, Jesus? I'm so glad you didn't give up on me. He said, I will never forsake you nor leave you. We may forsake him, but he'll never forsake us. Wait a second. Are you saying once saved, always saved? No, I'm not. If anybody forsakes, it'll be us. Nobody's going to be in hell saying, well, God gave up on me. No, he didn't. But the fact, knowing that he doesn't give up on you, gives us great hope. We need to shake that quitting feeling by praying for courage to face our cross of living for Jesus. Matthew 16:24. Jesus said to his disciples, if anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself and take up the cross and follow me. It takes courage to carry out this plan. And it takes courage to pray to God, but he'll always repay you back. So, what I want to leave you with is this. Very simply, pray. Pray. Got one more point for you. Can you guess what it is? Pray. You know it. There's your plan. I don't care what you're struggling with this week. And you hold me accountable to this too. Got a big week coming up, and after that, another big week. It just keeps getting busier. If I ever lost my Palm Pilot, I'm done. I am done. People will be calling, well, I won't have a phone. That'll be a good thing. But I know you're just as busy. Pray. This week, take the time to pray. All that Jesus does for us, we can't even spend an hour with Him. Let's try to do it. Take the prayer challenge this week. Take 1 hour. Take 1 hour and pray to God. You can take 1 minute chunks. You can take 4 15-minute, 2 half-hour. You can do the whole thing at one time, but take 60 minutes this week. And I want all of you to ask me this week when you see me, did I do my hour of prayer to God? Sweet hour of prayer. Sweet hour of prayer. Take the sweet hour of prayer, dare. I dare you to do that. You're going to be so happy you did. Some of you are already doing that. Sometimes we get so busy we forget to do the most important thing. Pray. Will you do that? Think about those things. And if you do not have a church family, you want to be part of this church family, and do not, why don't you come forward, let us know. If you haven't become a Christian yet, you need to be. Where is he? No, Josh, no, hang on a second. You know, Sarah was baptized this week on Thursday. If you didn't already know it, she was. And she understood it. Maybe you haven't made that commitment yet. We offer that. The water should still be warm, isn't it, Grant? Maybe you're thinking about entering that covenant. You're going to entrust your soul to the death, burial, and resurrection covenant of Jesus Christ. You can say all you want to. That doesn't prove a thing. You don't have to prove anything to me. You do have to prove it to yourself. Are you going to base your whole future on the death, burial, resurrection? You bet I am, Doug. Really? You haven't proved a thing to yourself till you get in there. There's only one reason you need to be baptized. Know that you understand the death, burial, resurrection, and covenant of Jesus Christ. That you're going to live a life of sacrifice to Him. You go in the water and you come up knowing that your sins have been forgiven. Baptism isn't how you're saved, it's when you're saved. It's when you know you had the right faith. So if you have not entered a covenant with Jesus, you can say everything that you want to say. You can have the greatest prayers ever, but scripturally, we just don't know. You don't have the proof that you need to get through the day. If you want to respond to the invitation for any reason, why don't you do so now?